Everybody is welcomed in the meeting. I will then give over to the DG to introduce his delegation and then start the business of the day. DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you, Chairperson, and the honorable members. Here, Chairperson, we have officials from the department, CCMA, supported employment enterprises, and the compensation fund. We have sitting right next to me the COO of the department, Ms. Marsha Pongos. And on the extreme left hand side is the commissioner of the compensation fund, Mr. Ovio Mafata. And on my right, Advocate Nkleki from the DG's office. And on the extreme right is the director of the CCMA, Mr. Cameron Mahajana. And next to him is the CFO of CCMA, Ms. Petsile Magakula. And Chairperson, I would like to also take this opportunity and introduce the Chairperson of the CCMA board. He is attending this session for the first time. His name is Mr. Makulu Lidwaba. Chair, we also have Mr. Sam Morotoba, who is the DDG of the Public Employment Services. And we have Meba Homi Madebesi, who is the DDG Corporate Services. We also have the CFO of the Compensation Fund, Mr. Tando Headbush. We have the CFO of the department, Mr. Peki Maduna. The spokesperson of the ministry, Stembe Hechwete. We've got the CEO of the SEE, Mr. Slumko Nondwango. And sitting next to him is the CFO of the SEE, Mr. Spenny Nongo. And we have Mr. Seafield, Virgil Seafield, who's the DDG Labour Market Policy and International Relations. We have the Director Risk from the Compensation Fund, Ms. Katlego Libepe. I know her as Ms. Motsuri. And I think and we have the Chief of Staff of the Ministry, Mr. Greg Schneemann. And we have the Chief Inspector who's representing DDG Inspection and Enforcement Services, Mr. Eki Mulwa. His name is Mr. Tibo Sana. And we have the departmental spokesperson, Mr. Tibo Ho Teacher. I think I've mentioned everyone.
Thank you, DG. I have been threatened to do what I do. If I continue with this meeting without adopting or them amending the agenda, I think both whips from the ANC and the DA, they'll make my life very difficult. So can we then look at the agenda and see if there are things that we need to amend or take it as it is? It's at adopted, Honorable Bahrain and Honorable Loli was seconded it. You can continue, teacher. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, before the DG continues, and first of all, welcome you back to South Africa. Yeah, it was a good trip. We will hear, obviously, from Zolani about the apologies for today. But personally, I'm very embarrassed because there are three of us sitting over here, other than you, Madam Chair, and we have a very full and competent and high-powered delegation from the Department of Labor. They've gone to an enormous amount of time, trouble, effort, and expense to get everyone to sit here today. And there are three of us sitting from Parliament other than you as the chair. I don't even believe we have a quorum, but over and above that, it's a disgusting operation to show the department how we feel. In that we're not in any way being able to be represent our parties. And I obviously there might be some people that are sick, and obviously Zolani will tell us why people are not here, but I'm not even sure if it's worth the while of the department to go through that exercise while I'm sitting over here and there are literally three of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Bahrain. Background. Honorable Loliwe.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the warm welcome received from the Honorable Member. And using the same tone, I just want to make him understand us because we could not sit when there was a delegation that was in IHO. That's why we are using Tuesday in this week. And a Tuesday is not a day set aside for the Labour Committee. So as a procedure in our party, if you sit in two committees and another committee decides to utilize a day for your committee, your first preference should be your committee which is supposed to sit formally on that particular day. We would have been embarrassed if tomorrow the situation on the side of the ANC was like this, because on Wednesdays, no apologies, members of the ANC are supposed to be attending the Labour Committee. They are here in Cape Town but attending to other committees. That is why you see another ANC member getting in now, so that at least we change the picture. They are not a wall. We know where they are. But I'm not doing Zolani's job. I just wanted to clarify my party position. They are not snuffing the department, but they are committed in their second committee. Thank you.
I think the apologies are in that manner, actually. In fact, I was called by Honorable Fabs just before we start. There's a member who is there who's going to be joining us. We understand, as Honorable Ololiwe is saying, we are behind because it's not only the budget vote, but ILO as well has delayed our work. We don't usually take two quarters in reports of different quarters at once, but when we look at our schedule, we won't finish. And there will be no strange mesh because you are here, you'll be interacting with the department, and there are no decisions that are going to be taken, and we'll be continuing. Some members will join us in the process. So I think that the explanation that we are giving, it's an explanation that should be accepted. that there is no attitude, there is nothing, but it's because of the schedule of Parliament. And if we further postpone this, we will never have time. So the four that are here, I think, are equal if they know their story in engaging with the department under the circumstances. Honorable Bachelor, your hand is up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I accept the explanation of the Honorable Oliwe. I don't have a particular problem with it, but I do express my disdain for what's actually happened. We don't have anyone else from any other party as well. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, and I'm certainly not pointing fingers at the Honourable Oliwe. She has to manage her caucus as best she can. But I do express my apologies to the department for that, because obviously they're sitting here, and they have taken the time and trouble to be here in full force, and they have to explain to a mere four of us. So, but yes, we must continue. We can't not continue. And obviously their reports will be taken back to those that aren't here. But thank you for that, and thank you for the opportunity.
No, thank you for understanding, Honorable Bachrain. You see, the why there's a... you see that there are no members. It's because the ANC members are not here. I don't want to talk about your colleagues from the other parties, because they are forever not here, by the way. The fact that the room is empty is because ANC members have gone to other committees. So the other people that you are really mentioning, I don't know how many times do they come to the committee. So I think the explanation, if you accept the explanation from Honorable Loliwa, I think let's go forward. Thank you. And I understand, I hope that the department understands. We are in this situation not because of our choice. You know, we also wanted to meet with you last week, but last week you were committed. We had to reschedule the meeting, by the way, Honorable Bahrain, the meeting that was meant for the department. But the department does not only account to us, but also account to the NSOP, and we had to give them that opportunity and abandon or reschedule the meeting. So it's this tight schedule that we have that lends us to the situation, not any other reason of people are lazy. Thank you. We may proceed, DJ. And thank you, Honorable, you know, I call you with that name now, Dunja, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health, for joining us. Honorable Liu.
On a lighter note, Chair, in the alliance, the ANC is the leader of the alliance. Maybe in the coalition, the DA is the leader of the coalition.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Atichi, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. I'm going to ask the COO of the department to take us through the presentation. It's 112 slides. Now, I will request the committee to advise in terms of our processes. I was saying to her, maybe what we need to do is to focus on those areas that we have not achieved and state the reasons, given the fact that committee members have had access to the report, if the committee chair agrees.
Members, there's a request and they all agree. We agree to proceed in that manner.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I hand over to her, I just want to preface our presentation by saying that if the committee remembers that when we started 2016-17 financial year, the performance of the department was sitting just above 60%. And in the first quarter of the first quarter of 2016-17, our performance was sitting at 62%. In the second quarter, we improved and moved to 69%. In the third quarter, we were sitting at 72%. And what the COO will presentation will reflect now is that quarter four was sitting at 79%. So what I'm trying to illustrate, Chairperson, is that there's been a considerable improvement in the performance of the department, considering where we come from. Just 2 years ago, we were at 43%, and we're now progressively sitting at 79%. We hope that in the 2017-18 financial year, the improvement will continue and will go over the psychological mark of 80%, because that's where we want to go. We want to make sure that we're sitting at 80-90%. With those few words, I'm going to ask the CEO to just run through the presentation and then we'll take questions. What we have done, Chairperson, we have included the supported employment enterprises in the one presentation, and the COO and the CFO will then take questions related to the performance of the entity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and honourable members. With your indulgence, I'm going to go immediately to slide number 8, which gives us the performance per strategic objective for quarter 3 as reflected on the board in front of us. In terms of strategic objectives, the contribution to employment creation, there we have had an overall achievement of 63%, which has been a dramatic improvement from the previous year's performance. The promotion of employment equity is lying at 80%, this is in quarter 3. The protection of vulnerable workers was lying at 80% in quarter 3 again. For quarter 3, the strengthening of multilateral bilateral relations, we did not have a target for that particular quarter for this strategic objective. Our occupational safety protection was one of the objectives where we have had 100% achievement of our indicators, as well as for the promotion of sound labour relations, there was 100% achievement. One area was the monitoring of the impact of legislation where we've had a problem in achieving our indicators and none of the two indicators were achieved. And then strengthening the institutional capacity or that of administration has been lying at 60%, and I think it's been a consistent performance on 50%. That brings us to a total of achievement of 72% of our indicators and 28% which were not achieved in quarter 3. The next slide, slide 9, gives us a breakdown in terms of the programs or the branches of the Department of Labour. Administration, as I have already alluded to, was lying at 60%. Inspection and Enforcement Services, you'll see, is lying at a very good 86%. And this program has shown a consistent improvement in performance. Public Employment Services lying at 63%, which has also shown a consistent improvement from previous quarters year on year, as well as labour policy and industrial relations. I would then like to take the members to slide number 12, which is the first area of non-achievement for administration, which is the MPAT. The development and the sign-off of the MPAT action plan had to be done by 30 January, but we received the moderated report only 2 days before Christmas last year. And it should be 23 December 2016, not 17. And as you know, the whole of South Africa closes down over December, January, so we could not do the action plan because of the time frame in which we received it. The next area of non-achievement was that of filling a vacancy. You will see that we had a number of 894 vacancies which were not filled. And this continues to be a challenge to the department because we promote people from within as far as possible. And if you promote someone, you create a vacancy again. So it becomes a sort of a constant wheel that is turning and staying on that vacancy level. There's been a small improvement in quarter 3, which I will talk to a little bit later. That takes care of administration. If I can proceed then to the next slide, which is slide 16, where there's the area of non-achievement. Here it is the review of employers for compliance with employment equity legislation, or the so-called DG review. We had to review 162. We have reviewed only 160 and found only 3 employers to be compliant. And I'm sure members will agree that linking this to the report that we got from the Commission, we can see the challenges that we're having in this area. The reason for the 2 that we could not do is the unavailability of the designated employers, and those inspections were caught up in quarter 4. Then if we go to slide number 19, this is an indicator which has been partially achieved, and because we're using the legend 100% is achieved and under that is not achieved, it is not achieved. The area where there was non-achievement was the training of shop stewards, and this has been consistent also through last year that the shop stewards do not attend the training that we provide, and we have changed it in the 2017-18 annual performance plan so that we do training on request. Here we gave ourselves an absolute target of shop stewards to be trained, and we realized that there is a challenge with the shop stewards attending the training. That takes care of IES. I would just like to focus the members' attention. Previously you requested us to give you a breakdown per province in terms of performance against the targets of the provinces, and these slides are from slide 24 going forward to slide 36, 37, the unpacking thereof. It is there, and I'm sure if there are questions from the honourable members about specifics, then the acting DDGIS can report. If I can now move to public employment services for quarter 3, the first area of non-achievement we would find on slide 39. And this is the regulations on the registration of work seekers which had to be tabled to the ES board. At that time it was still delayed, but the programs for the board were developed and it was distributed then, but after the time frames that we agreed to in terms of our annual performance plan. The next area of non-achievement for public employment services would be on slide 41. And members will recall that this has been with us the whole year that we have not performed or not achieved on this indicator. This is the application from private employment agencies and temporary employment agencies, where only 66 were processed within 34 days. And the delays were in the verification process, where incomplete applications or applications with wrong documents and so on were submitted to provinces, and then provinces accept them, and it leads to delays in the finalization of these processes. And then the second one is the percentage of applications for foreign nationals, corporate and individual work visas, which were processed within 30 working days. Again, this was not achieved. 67% was achieved within the 30 working days, and the reason is exactly the same as for the for indicator 1.7. Again, the next number of slides, up to slide 49, takes care of the detailed analysis per province. And that is takes care then of public employment services for quarter 3 and the areas of non-achievement. The next program is program 4, Labour Policy and Industrial Relations. And if we go then to slide 55, the first area here is the fact that the annual trend reports were produced, but they were produced late and then subsequently published. But because we did not keep to the time frames, it was indicated as not having been achieved. On slide 56, it is exactly the same. The reports were developed, but they were developed late, and therefore we could not say that we had achieved. It was subsequently published after that. That takes care of quarter 3 for Department of Labor called to see performance. Chairperson, I would like to just be guided. Do you want me to include SEE now? Can I do 3 and 4 at the end of the door for quarter four presentation? Members, continue. Honorable Pompey.
Just from a practical point of view, we've got the printout of the slides, and thank you for that, but it doesn't actually have the numbers on the slides. We've got the numbers on the pages. So you're rushing through it, and I'm busy trying to follow what you're saying, and I know you're rushing because we're trying to get everything done, you know, but it makes it very difficult for us to look at the veracity of the information that's coming through. So if you could tell us what's the page number, because when I ask you some questions at the end, and through you, Madam Chair, I'm not going to be able to refer to slide numbers. I'll refer to page numbers. So I presume you've got the same handout as well. But thank you for that.
The question is, members, do we ask questions now or we allow the presentation to continue? Honourable Lulu.
Chair, I propose we deal with this one and finish with it and then proceed to the next one. I want to advise my friend to renew the spectacle without any amendment. Numbers are there.
No, yeah. I think yeah, they will understand because it's really pages. What we see. I don't know. Maybe I'm like Honorable Bahrain. I don't see two numbers, I see one number. With others it may, I don't think we will get lost. Neither will you be getting lost because the question, you will know exactly which question you are asking. Honorable members? Honorable Lollywood?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let me start with the comment of the DG to say there's considerable improvement. DG, I think by now you understand that you are serving a committee of perfectionists. We want 100%, DG, we don't want considerable improvement. So rather gallop so that before we end our term here, we see the ground covered on the work that the department is doing. Going to slide 12, where you are complaining about vacancy, in fact, you are indicating vacancy rate, which is seated at 894. And the reason given is the fact that you promote people from within. There are time frames set for vacancies. Why are you not advertising within the specified time frame? For instance, why is a post left vacant for more than 3 months? Because if that was not the case, I don't think you would have a vacancy rate standing at 894 for funded posts. We have unemployment rate, which is very high, and you are sitting over 894 vacancies. That one is not on, so give us a convincing reason for that. Slide 19, where you are talking about the training of shop stewards. Is it a program you have or you have run advocacy to an extent that you can boldly stand up to say the beneficiaries to this training know about the processes followed so as to access it? What are you doing to reduce the number of non-adherents? Slide 39, you have the issue where you talk to registration of job seekers. How do the people that are in remote rural areas access this? Because my understanding is that currently you are registering electronically. But think of a kid that is in a village called Edomnab. How is that person going to access this benefit? Again, we will say in terms of registration of foreign nationals, we are lagging behind.
We're trying to keep up with the speed with the questions, but if I can ask the Honourable Lulu, we just a little bit slower.
Oh, apologies.
She's not,
I leave you.
Yeah,
On which question did I leave you? It's John Naba that is making you not to capture you. And I'm happy that John Naba is making you not to capture you. I'm saying there are those who stay in rural areas, like a village called Donaba, who have no access to emails and all the modern facilities. How do they get hold of this? Because they are also unemployed. The last one is, we were conducting oversight. And every time we go on oversight, we find unregistered foreign nationals. And now you are talking of backlog in as far as you are concerned in their registration. Now as a committee, where do you place us? Who should we blame? Because when we find foreign nationals that are not registered, we say to inspectors, apply law. And you are here saying you also have not met your targets. Who is to take the blame so that you don't give them a raw deal when the problem is with yourself? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, DG. I'd like to direct you to slide 14. That's on page 7, and for some reason we have not spoken to that slide. And it indicates there that from the percentage reporting of detected irregular, fruitless, and wasteful and unauthorized expenditure, 100% achieved irregular expenditure detected was 30,340,000, and fruitless and wasted expenditure 38,000,000 and 21,000 and 4. Now, we may have achieved the target in terms of the key performance indicator that's reporting the sort of wastages and unauthorized and fruitless and wasted expenditure. So if we go, if we advance to the fourth quarter, the same situation, which is slide 66, same situation presents itself there in the sense that, you know, we have achieved the target in terms of the reporting of such incidences. But if you look at the amount involved, I mean, on the one hand, the irregular expenditure detected increased from 30 million to 57.6 million, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure increased from 38 million to a whopping 129 million. And I think the point that I'm trying to make is that the substantive interpretation of those figures, you know, you need to speak to that, you know, what, where, and how, and what has been done, because it doesn't appear to me, if one look at the fourth quarter, that there's some sort of process and mechanism involved in arresting the tide against fruitless and wasteful expenditure and that kind of thing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Background.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're getting my surname right. I'm very impressed. Thank you. I don't have all that much to ask, but you tell us that the inspection and enforcement on page 9, I think, or slide 9, you had 86%. But let me, and as I think we need to bear in mind that these targets are set by the department themselves. They're not externally set. These are set by yourselves. And so it's going to tell us sorry picture, because if you look at the inspection and enforcement, if you go to page 8, and with respect to my colleague, it's number number 16, if I peer directly into it, he says, of the 160 employers reviewed, 157 were non-compliant. Now that's the most horrific picture, because if we extrapolate on that, let's take that there are, say, 500,000 employers in this country, if not more, and especially if you go to the informal businesses, which you fall under your purview as well, which very seldom get inspected. In fact, we never hear of inspections in the informal sector because you're going to have 100% non-compliance. But if you're looking at this, this is the formal sector probably, and probably it's 157 out of 160. That means that your inspection services are almost at null, never mind 86%. Because even when we as Parliament go on an oversight visit, we've never been to a place where there's no complaints. And we go to very formal businesses. We very seldom go into a township and go into a spaza shop and then have a look and see if they've got letters of appointment, if they're paying PAYE, UIF, workman's compensation. Because I hazard a guess that that will be probably close to 0% compliance. So what I'm really trying to say in defining this is that inspection and enforcement, the target you've set, which gave you 86%, is wholly skewed. And I have a real problem with that, because I think everyone in South Africa knows that when you go from workplace to workplace, how many employees in this country actually have letters of appointment. And I would be amiss to say that it's more than 5% of the employees in the economy. Very few more than 5% would have letters of appointment. That's just at the base level. So I look at that. When you look at page 9, slide 18, you say you 100% of the 29, or call it 30,000 workplaces inspected. There you're saying 4,000, or just about 4,000, again, with non-compliance. Now again, that's an enormous number to show us the non-compliance that's happening. And it'd be interesting to see what actual workplaces you inspected. Were they set up factories, registered in certain areas and that sort of thing. And again, that figure, even with the registered formal companies, they were non-compliant, which is unbelievable. I go to page 12, and I have a look at slide number 23. My eyesight is not great. A total of 3,000 employer audits were conducted, a variance of 239. Again, 3,000 employer audits, it's a drop in the ocean. And I have made the point to the DG in the past is that we need to readjust our figures completely, because inspection and enforcement is probably the only way we're going to get our employers to be compliant. And the only way, in other words, there's no carrot here. There's only the stick, and our stick is so flimsy that it's not even worth the fight. And I know that every year we have a budget from the DG, and every year we go through the budget, and every year we bring up the point about inspection and enforcement, and it hardly exists. You could speak to your colleague from the CCMA who's sitting here today, and he will tell you that every time they have a complaint, and their complaints are multiplying. They are multiplying every single day, they're getting more and more. But when the complaints come to the CCMA and you start investigating that business, there's no such thing as any business that's come there that's actually fully compliant with our labour laws. And those normally are not the informal sector at all. It's normally the formal sector, and it's just not compliant. So I have an overall problem, and I can go through all these slides and point that problem to you, but I have an overall problem in that I don't think the Department of Labor has been capacitated. And maybe you want to comment on that. I just don't think so. Maybe the DG might want to comment on that. My learned colleague Loliwe, Honorable Loliwe, looked at the shop steward's training. And again, this is endemic. If you're going to offer something to people and they don't have to commit to pay something or give something towards it, they're not going to come. And I think it's a lesson to be learned from any department. I know that if I'm going to have a seminar on labor law and I don't charge people 10 rand a head, then I'm going to have 100 people saying, well, come there, and then on the day only two will pitch up. But if they all pay their 10 rand, then everyone pitches up because they're losing something. So people don't see the value in what the department's offering, because I can't think of anything more valuable than shop steward training. Absolutely fantastic idea and fantastic value to it. But if they're not paying, and I know that again, if you look to your colleague from the CCMA, they charge the unions to come. And then once they pay, they'll make sure that someone's there. You'll see that the union bosses whip those shop stewards into being there, and then they actually pitch and they have very successful training. And maybe it's a lesson that you could learn from that, and maybe you want to comment on that. I want to make an overall comment again on the employment agencies and the whole concept. It seems to be failing completely. Ever since its inception, it's a mere drop in the ocean. And maybe we should be giving help to the private sector, and maybe having a togetherness with the private sector, as opposed to you creating that sector within the department. Again, it's a philosophical question, and it's only the department that can look at us and say, are you actually making a dent in unemployment through that? Because we're spending a lot of money there. And again, I don't think we're making any dent. I mean, if we're going to employ 1,000 people, it's really, and the money that we're spending, we might as well rather take that money and give it to people for not working. It becomes horrific. In terms of the foreign nationals, I said, and again, a philosophical question, I seem to think that because we're not wanting to have foreign nationals work in this country, and I understand that because we've got such high unemployment rates of our own people, why bring in foreign nationals? We need to have a rethink again on whether we're actually trying to get people certificated or not. Are we actually spending time and money on this? Because there are many foreign nationals that come in, and again, it's a philosophical question, but for every foreign national, we need to test. Are they going to train a local? And we need to test, for every foreign national that gets a job, how many locals are going to be employed, new employment, to assist that foreign national. And I've been through this exercise on a private basis, where every time I bring in a foreign national, I say, you need to tell us whether, in fact, you're going to employ 5 locals under that foreign national, and then you're also going to train those 5 locals on that. And again, it's a philosophical question. And I'm sorry to give so many philosophical questions to the DG, but I have an overall problem with our state of employment in the country. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Chair. Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to familiarize myself with the document. But just on, and the DG will pardon me because I'm from a sector that is not in general. So the question for me in terms of the number of shop stewards being trained, is it possible to reflect, remember that we've got different labor federations. Where are they, which from which one, so that we are able to really understand foreign nationals. I'm trying to check that, Chair, but my question is in which sector? I guess, remember that we've got security, we've got hospitality, we've got in which sector, so that as we do our
work as public representatives in our constituency areas, we are able to help and understand and be able to come back to you. So that's why my question is, from which sector the challenges with the registration of foreign nationals? Otherwise, I will come back to you again. There's a question I lost here, which I really wanted, which is of great interest.
Thank you, members, DG. Then maybe on this question of foreign nationals, let me just write on the questions that have been asked. Which categories are you referring to that where you are lagging behind in registration? Which categories? You have those DG that are highly skilled come through your office and other departments. You also have those who are working in the sectors where you find a lot of vulnerable workers, your farms, your security, domestic workers, etc. Exactly which sector are you referring to?
So, next one, so vacancy rate, which is quite alarming given the nature of and the responsibility to this department. Have you ever thought of, whilst you are looking to try to address the issue of leadership, so that you are then able, it's going to be addressing two things, empowering youth to understand this, because there are young people around that have done labor law and whatever, who are roaming around. Have you ever considered the issue of leadership so that you are then able to address the issue of capacity in terms of addressing the work in the department?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Did you?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The comment made by Honorable Loliwe with regards to the improvement of the of our performance as a department is noted, and we certainly striving to make sure that we do 100% in everything that we want to do. So we're heading in that direction, Chairperson. The vacancy rate, as indicated by the COO, this is a moving target. There are two developments that have taken place in the department. One, both the compensation fund and the unemployment insurance fund have expanded. And the compensation fund, as you will get the presentation from the commissioner, is in a process of implementing a new structure. The business has been separated into three. We took a decision that at a frontline level in the department, we have serious capacity constraints. Now, we needed to increase the number of client service officers at frontline level. Now, we have created, I think, more than 250 client service positions. Now, those positions are actually impacting on the number of vacancies that we have, because those are newly created positions. Now, all these vacancies that you see here, 90% of them have been advertised, and the process of filling them is underway. Now, the point that the CEO was raising, that every time you fill a post with the internal candidate, you create another vacancy. And I think that's the challenge that we're sitting with. And we're happy that we're promoting people internally, because what it says, and it says to them that they have a future in the department and they can continue working in the department when there are vacancies they will be considered. We are considering learnerships. And I think this year we'll also have DDG Corporate Services will also have an intake of learners. The compensation fund has taken quite a number, and some of them are on a contract. So we consider all sorts of opportunities that we can give to young people. And as I indicated earlier on, that a number of these vacancies we have advertised them. We now, actually what is delaying is capturing them on the system, capturing all the CVs that we have received as a response to the adverts that we sent out. And that currently is proving to be very, very difficult, because we only have very few hands at HR. But we are in the process of addressing this. We're pulling all the resources that we have to make sure that we fast track the interview process. The training of shop stewards.
Can't get this question. The question of vacancy. Is there no way that you can do this process differently without creating the vacuum where you promoted the internal ones to a higher position? I'm asking this question because when you are going to have a new post, higher post, you know in advance that there will be space, meaning that you should be in the process starting to advertise, so that by the time the other one moves from that vacant, someone else is ready to fill in the vacant post.
Chair, it's much easier when you are creating a vacancy. But if you had interviews and you're filling the vacancy, because remember, you don't know who's going to be appointed. So you have to make the appointment first, and then you create a vacancy. So that's the challenge that we have, that once we've had the interviews, we appoint someone internally, we leave a vacancy there. So it's only after that person has received a letter of appointment that you can start the process of recruiting again. It's much easier when we had the post of the DDG Corporate Services, we knew that the previous DDG was going to retire. So before she retired, we advertised the post. So by the time she left, the process was already underway in terms of filling the post. So there are instances where it's possible to do that. There are instances where it's not possible. We explore all possibilities. The training of the shop stewards, I think it's a question raised by Honorable Oliver and also by Honorable Bagrin. This is part of the department's work is divided into three. One, we have advocacy and education, which is the part that really attempts to ensure that companies understand what they need to do, unions understand what their responsibilities are before we employ the carrot, the stick. We start with the carrot, we make sure that we advocate the policies. Now, what we've been doing wrong, we assumed that because there's going to be a training, the federations are going to send members, or unions are going to send members, or they're going to send shop stewards. We also assumed that shop stewards are going to be released by their employers, because you also have challenge where employers refuse to release shop stewards. But you also have another challenge where unions do not see to it that shop stewards attend the training. So you have two problems. That is why we've decided now that let training be on a request basis. So if you know you have a challenge, you want to empower your shop stewards, come to the department, we will assist to make sure that that training takes place. But you want to tell us you need X number of shop stewards to be trained on this and that and that, and you'll make sure that you bring those shop stewards there. So that's the approach that we're taking now, which seems to be working, because in the 2017-18 financial year, so far we haven't had a problem. But we think that it's a very important, and it's a need, it's a necessity for us to do this, because empowerment of shop stewards help us to, to reduce the number of visits that ordinarily inspector would have had to a workplace. Because if both employers and unions play their responsibilities well, there will not be a need for an inspector to go and do an inspection, because the two parties will be talking to one another and understanding their responsibilities. On the access, citizens' access to the training and employment opportunities, there are areas where we find it very difficult to access. However, we have buses. I think we have two buses that we employ that go to the far-flung areas to make sure that we render a service there. When we do this, we have what we call jobs fair, where we will galvanize the employers in a certain area. We talk to them and say to them, look, if you have job opportunities, on a certain day and time, we'll come to this specific area, and please be part of this. And most of the time, I must say that employers, they take these things very seriously, and they join the department. And we have been able to see placement of young people taking place live, because the buses that we have are equipped with technology that enables our officials to capture, and they're able to point out to young people where the job opportunities are. And as I explained, I think some time ago, that we also have our career counselors who are able to assist the job seekers as well, with counseling them and pointing to them where the job opportunities are. So this does take place, but we acknowledge the fact that we can't be everywhere, and we are doing our best to make sure that we extend the services to those areas that are not close to where our offices are. And we're constantly thinking about how best we can reach those people. The question raised by Honorable America. Oh, there's a question on the foreign nationals, who the committee should blame. Our responsibility as a department is twofold when it comes to the issue of foreign nationals. The application for work permits comes through to the Department of Labor. We process it. There's a number of activities that we must do, one of which is to do the salary benchmarkings, and inspectors going to check whether these companies are really complying with the law. And then we make a recommendation to Home Affairs. So that's another process. And of course, linking this question with the question raised by Honorable Bagrim with regards to skills transfer, it is the responsibility of the company that imports the skill to see to it that there is indeed skills transfer in line with the skills and critical guidelines. Because it is only those skills that we do not have in the country that could be imported. And those skills could not be imported indefinitely. Surely the interest of the companies should be to make sure that South Africans as well are given an opportunity to be able to do the job that foreigners are doing. And I think we understand the impact that they play in terms of because they possess the skills and they contribute to our economy. But we need to make sure that we train our own people as well to acquire those skills. So that's one part, Chairperson. The second part is when it comes to unregistered foreign nationals, it's the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs to see to it that all foreign nationals that are in the country are in the country legally. Now, what happens in a situation where a foreign national is employed? That employer has to make sure that whoever is employed, irrespective of that person's nationality, the employer has to make sure that the rights that are accorded to South Africans are equally accorded to the foreign nationals. What it means is that they cannot be underpaid. If there's a sectoral determination in a sector, they have to be paid in accordance with that sectoral determination. Now, what we do as a department is we work together with the Department of Home Affairs. When we do inspections, we look at issues of employment, working conditions and wages. The Department of Home Affairs, the immigration officials will look at the validity of the work permits. So we complement one another as the two departments. So the answer, Honorable Chairperson, to the question who should be blamed, if unregistered foreign nationals are employed, is the responsibility of the employer, again, to see to it that in line with the Basic Condition of Employment Act that says you need to keep records of who you are employing, the details of where the person comes from, where the person is staying, whether the person is legally in the country, is the responsibility of the employer. So once you get the ID of the person, you can see whether this person is in the country legally or illegal. So that's the first thing. The second responsibility is the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs. Our responsibility. You can blame us if they are not paid in accordance with the basic condition of employment or the existing sectoral determination. The question asked by Honorable America on slide 14 with regards to fruitless and unauthorized and irregular and wasteful expenditure, there are two parts to that question, Honorable Chairperson. One is the reporting and detection of irregular expenditure and fraud and wasteful expenditure. So what we're reporting is that because we've put mechanisms in place and systems in place, we're able to detect this irregular and fruitless expenditure. The second part is, what do we do once you've detected that. And we've taken steps to make sure that these things do not happen. We've applied what we call consequence management. The last point that I would like to do is to just indicate to the Honourable Member that those figures are not in millions, they are in rand, so they don't look scary as they are, because they are not in millions, they are in rand. The question raised by Honourable Bakraim, Chairperson of Inspection and Enforcement Services, with regards to non-compliant employers, I think that's slide 16. The 86% that we're referring to is the sum total of the work that the inspectors have done, not only slide 16. Slide 16 refers to those employers who are regarded as designated employers in terms of the employment equity. So the number of the designated employers that have been inspected is at 167. And slide page 9, slide 18, the 4,260 non-compliant what sort of companies were inspected as well. There are two types of inspections that we do. It's the proactive inspection and the reactive inspection. So the proactive inspection, we plan, we say we're going to these following companies. And most of these companies that we go to are your formal companies. You know there's a factory there and all that. And then the second part, which is a reactive work, is as a result of a complaint that we get. And most of the time, I must say, some of these complaints, they originate from an informal sector, where a person will say, I have not been paid X, Y, and Z, or I've been working, I have not been paid at all. So it really depends on the nature of the complaint and where we want to go and do an inspection. So the 4,260 non-compliant companies, we have a legal obligation to issue them with the legal instruments that we have and then take them through the court processes to make sure that they comply, and we have done that. The slide 23 on employer audit, the inspection I drop in an option, we agree, and if the committee members recall, we indicated that both the unemployment insurance fund and compensation fund, they will be increasing the number of employer audits. Because these are officials that basically do inspection work related to UIF and the compensation fund. So the number will be increasing in this financial year 2017-2018. The comment with regards to the fact that there is no carrot but a stick, Chairperson, we beg to differ. Because I think that we do our best to sit down with employers and walk the journey with them to see to it that they comply. And really, it is those employers who refuse to work with us that we take them to court. A number of employers, and that's why we're able to even say that of the work that we do, we would register more than like 86% in some instances in terms of compliance. Because those employers who did not comply, we went back to them and they said, well, we made a mistake, they complied. But those that simply refuse, we then take them to court. I think this is the process that we follow. Do we think that DOL is fully capacitated? I think that the committee has been raising this question, and we have been on record saying we would love to have more inspectors than we have currently. The reality is that we don't. What we want, what we are doing is to use the limited resources that we have effectively so that we're able to achieve our objectives. And we would like the committee to use its power and its influence to be able to help us to get more inspectors. We would love to get more inspectors. But the reality is, even if we were to get tenfold of the number that we have, we will not be able to reach every workplace. And I think what we all of us should be saying is that let's all be responsible. Employers have to be responsible, employees have to be responsible. So that we don't, so that there's no need for an inspector to go to a workplace where workplace-related challenges could be resolved. I think that's what we should be striving for. And that's the intention of the Labor Relations Act, is to see to it that there's workplace democracy. Whether that happens is something else, but I think that it's what the CCMA is striving to do, and the commissioner, the director will allude to this fact. And I think that's the only way where we can reduce a number of the challenges that we have if we all grow up and become responsible citizens. Well, we, in some instances, we've worked with the CCMA to train shop stewards. And we've done that, and we're gonna continue doing that so that we empower shop stewards, as I indicated earlier on. Employment services seems to be failing, and maybe it should be handed over to a private sector. We hold a different view, and the DDG Public Employment Services would add to what I'm going to say. When we brought the Public Employment Services Act or bill before NEDLEC and before the committee, we actually wanted to compel companies to register job opportunities with the department. Now, we were advised that what we were attempting to do is unconstitutional, so we backed off. We then said, well, because we have a system, we will encourage employers to come and report job opportunities, and so that we can register them, and it's actually a free service. So instead of paying a temporary employment services provider, you can come to the Department of Labor, you get free services, matching can take place, and you get the people that you want. And it seems that people do not prefer free service. They prefer to pay exorbitant amounts of money. And we've been on the radio, TVs, advocating the work of the employment services. So what you see in terms of the number of people that we place is actually a microcosm of what is happening in the society, in our economy, where you have job opportunities there, but you have people that do not have the requisite skills that are required by the economy. Now, I think if we can deal with the structural nature of the unemployment that we have, I think we will be able to address some of these things. And even that your temporary employment services these days are even struggling to place people. And that's why you see every week, if you read the newspapers, you'll see job opportunities. So I don't think that it's a failure, but we also don't compete with the private sector with temporary employment services. We think that we should coexist and complement one another. If an employee is placed, or if the job seeker is placed elsewhere, that's good for the for us as a country. And in fact, what we're going to do now, we're going to work with the temporary employment services so that we know when they place people, and they will get access to our employment services system. That's what we want, so that we don't seem to be competing, we seem to be complementing one another. I think I've dealt with the issue of foreign nationals and the transfer of skills. I think I've also, currently, Honorable Chairperson, we don't have data as to which sectors do we face challenges with regard to the registration of foreign nationals. Mr. Mrotova, I don't know if you have that figure with you, but we can make this available to the committee, giving the committee that breakdown. Learnerships, I think I've alluded to that. And the question raised by the chairperson on the categories that we are lagging behind in terms of the registration of foreign nationals, we don't have that data now, but we'll make it available to the committee. Thank you, Chair. Can I ask Chair Mr. Mrotova if he wants to add something?
Thanks, DG. Just on access, I think over and above what the DG said, and over and above the 126 labor centers that we have, we also have a whole range of satellite offices. We operate from Tucson centers. We have bought cars that our officials use to travel to these visiting points. And we also have introduced where there are post offices, e-gov services, where people in the rural communities can also access our services. And those that have cell phones, that have internet services, they can also access the services. And briefly on the PAs, I think the DG did indicate that the law that you honorable members passed talks about coexistence, and the labor relations put an obligation on the Department of Labor to regulate the sector, both the private employment agencies and the temporary employment services. And even their own association is advocating for regulations, and we will be either during the course of this year or next year, now that we have agreed with the sector, bringing before you the Convention 182, which talks to the coexistence and the functioning of the private employment agencies and how it relates to government, because employers in this country, as part of the ILO, are of the view that that convention, as covered in the Employment Services Act, is something that we need to be considering ratifying, because we believe that we have met the requirements, including them working with the International Organization for Private Employment Organizations, and we also work with the World Association of Public Employment Services. So what we are doing and the coexistence and the working relationship that we have with private employment agencies is not something that is unique in South Africa. It's something that is there internationally, and we have been working together, and there is no competition. I think DG, you covered most of the other points. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable. No, Chair is in the area of inspection, inspectors. I'd be very much interested if you do have a relationship, working relationship with other inspectors in other sectors. In this case, I will be referring to health. Remember that I have inspectors, but what then becomes your relationship with that? There is a entity under the Department of Health called Office of Health Standard Compliance, which goes out and inspects health institutions. Is there a relationship? Because I'm of the understanding, I was regularly informed that you went to a place code X and you find a police station not in order, you close it down, which is fine, commendable. But what if do you go, if you find in other sectors where they also have inspectors, but you find things that are of a very bad state, what do you do? So that's why the question is the relationship between the two.
Honorable Loliwa, let me give the department an opportunity to answer before she goes for another meeting. She's promising to come back. Then I'll take you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we do work with the Department of Health. In fact, we have an existing memorandum of understanding with the Department of Health.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, mine is just a comment. DG, appointments cannot be treated as if you are an institution that has an intake. You see, if I can make an example with the police, you have an intake of 800 police. I'm just making an example. You can't have 894 vacancies, even if it is because of the manner in which the appointments impact on your organogram. There was no stage where you appointed 894 people at a go. It means these vacancies are left unfilled or not filled. But also, DG, you are indicating that 90% has already been advertised. What about this 10%? Because these are funded vacancies. I just want to indicate to the department that for us as people who know that South Africa has a drought of jobs, having 894 vacancies at a go is a huge number, because that would have made a difference in lives of certain families. So reduce the number. Don't delay appointments. It's as if you are collecting these vacancies until they reach a particular number. Because I was happy when you said at some stage you appointed 50 people at client services. So if you had 50 vacancies, I would understand. What if you are appointing a DG, a DDG or whatever, you are speaking of one person. How did you reach the 894? Yes, I'm not saying respond to that now, but next time you come with a report, don't come with a huge number of funded posts that are not filled. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Akram.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments. And I'm pleased to hear about the expanding access that you're opening up, say, at post offices and whatever. It's actually important to know. I tell you what's more important is for the public to know. It's all very well for us to know, for the public to know. Now, often when I have done it before, I've put the question to the DG, that we should have people talking on community radio stations. More people listen to radio than television. And the community have access to radios. Most community that I know have access at least to radios. And these community radio stations would welcome with open arms any official from the Department of Labor to come and speak. It won't cost you anything. If you just, DG, send a mailer out to the 1,000 radio stations, I think there are more than 1,000 radio stations out there, just a mailer to them saying that we would have an inspector or someone to come and talk for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, either an hour, to say in your area, this is where we're going to be setting up, this is what we can do. You'd be inundated. I, last night, wearing my parliamentary hat, spoke on a community radio station, And we got over 300 SMSs in the 20 minutes that I was speaking about problems that people have at work. Over 300. It'll take me the next 2 or 3 weeks to answer them. But I'm not the Department of Labor. Often I do. I know Mr. Mufata is getting sick of me because often I just bat them onto him. But at the end of the day, I think you could offer that service to the community radio station. Cost you nothing. It unfortunately will mean someone from the department to speak outside working hours. That's the unfortunate part. But I do hold that hand out to you. I can give you a list of all those radio stations and their email addresses. It's probably worthwhile because if you've gone to the trouble as a department to give the access, then let the message get out there. You know, DG, that we have almost 10 million South Africans out of jobs, who are looking for jobs or were looking for jobs. There's almost 10 million of us. In reality, if every person looks after 3 or 4 people, that's the whole of South Africa are suffering because of this. There's not one person, there's not one family in this country that is untouched by unemployment. I think every family, no matter how wealthy or poor they are, every family is touched by it. And so we're facing an enormous tragedy, and unfortunately the Department of Labor is at the forefront. You are soldiers out there that we need to fight this battle as a department. Just quickly to have a look at employment services. And I don't want to knock anyone. I know they're doing as best they can, and I'm certainly not one in favor of telling people that they're not doing a bad job or anything like that. Madam Chair, I don't think we've paid our bills. Just keep knocking us out. Just in terms of that, employment services, it's an issue of bang for buck. That's the real issue. And what I mean by that is we're spending an enormous amount of money on this, and I understand it's experimental, it's new in this country, and we are trying to follow some of the international examples of where it has been successful. But we're not getting our bang for the buck. And if we just took that money and put it into inspection services, I'm not sure, I haven't done the math, so I'll do that for you, but imagine how many extra inspectors we could have if we didn't have that service. We hear from you today that the public are still more interested in paying for that service. They are. And they go to the private agencies for the placements. And they're paying big money for it. Why is that? There's got to be a reason. People don't pay for something if they can get it for nothing. There's got to be a reason why they're paying for it. I don't know the reason. I'm not a big employer out there, but they've got to have reasons. Sometimes they pay thousands of rands to place someone when they could have done it through our employment services for nothing. So there's got to be a reason, and I think the bang for the buck is just not answerable. In terms of our relationship with Home Affairs, the Department of Labor's Home Affairs, I don't think that's at an all-time high. More often than not, I get complaints from the public to say that the Department of Labor have now approved the appointment of a person. They've been through the exercise. Is the person needed? Can you get a South African? Are you going to train locals? Etc., etc. You go through quite a rigorous, and I must applaud the department for this, you go through a rigorous exercise before someone is given the okay that you can employ Mr. Rodriguez. However, somehow there's a divide between Home Affairs, and that's created enormous trouble in the workplace, because then somehow it never happens, and they wait for months and months, and then they just say, oh, let's freeze the post. I've been through an example, in fact, yesterday of a company that wanted to employ a foreign national because they had the skills of speaking Russian. And they said, if we can have that foreign national come in and work, it will create jobs for another 5 South Africans. And it's really difficult to then take the South Africans and teach them the skill of teaching Russian. That's not so easy. But at least they create the extra jobs. And I'm sure that's what the department did. The Department of Labor goes through that exercise. Are you going to be creating extra jobs if you can't impart the skills, at least to create the extra jobs? But then Home Affairs never get back to you. And I don't know if we can implore you to try and get that nexus between yourselves and Home Affairs working more efficiently. The bottom line, we're all sitting here, every single one of us in this room, we want more jobs. not at the expense of South Africans, but we want more jobs. And if it means that you employ one foreign national and we get 5 extra jobs, it might be worth it. You are more intelligent than us in that sphere, and you'll be able to tell us whether it is worth it or not. But when you do say, yes, okay, we give it a stamp of approval, then at least make sure it's more efficient between yourselves and Home Affairs. Those are my comments, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Do you want to comment? Or we pass?
Chair, just to... The issues raised by Honorable Lolo, I think they were comments and advice to the department, and I think so are the issues that were raised by Honorable Graham. Just to indicate that our relationship with Home Affairs, I think it has improved. We are, I think, at a stage where we were able to, get information as to why applications have not been processed, when we've made recommendations and all that to the Department of Home Affairs. So there's regular interaction between the Department and Home Affairs. So I think that relationship is at the all-time high as we speak. With regards to the issue of public employment services, whether it's an issue of a bank for back, I think that there's a need for public employment services. And if you look at countries that are experiencing what we're experiencing in the country, it is public employment services that is able to ensure that the unemployed people, the work seekers, are able to be placed in employment opportunities. And so that when the economy picks up and more jobs are created, these work seekers would have acquired the skills that are needed to be placed on permanent employment opportunities. So we, like you indicated, we are constantly improving the kind of a service that we are offering, and we have made this appeal to employers that they must use this system, the employment services system that we have. And we indicated earlier on that to illustrate the point that we are not in competition with the temporary employment services, the private employment agencies. We want them to have access to our system so that they can draw unemployed people from a system, and we track the placement of those unemployed people. And I think that's what we're working towards now. And if you look at the kind of a system that we have compared with what other countries have, you'll find that this public employment service, actually, the actual implementation is an outsourced kind of a model, where the Department of Labor would hire private companies to run public employment services. And what we have here is a wholly owned service system that we have as a department. And we're saying we can work with the private sector to make sure that more people are placed in employment, and there's more collaborated efforts to make sure that unemployed people get the training. We need to bring in the Department of Higher Education. In fact, we've brought in the Department of Higher Education to make sure that these people are also prepared for employment opportunities whenever they exist. We take up the advice of using community radio stations. I have my communication head here, and certainly we will use this opportunity we'll get in touch with the community radio stations. We want to send out as more as a positive message with regard to the services that we render as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Can you continue?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to move to quarter four, Department of Labour Performance Report, and thereafter, if you will allow me, continue also with Supported Employment Enterprises, quarter three and four. Thank you. The first slide I'm going to refer to is on page 30, and it's slide 60. The title of the slide, quarter four performance, the strategic objective, 2016-17. It is, as with quarter three, unpacking the strategic objectives and then also the performance on the strategic objectives. Firstly, the contribution to employment creation. There was an overall achievement of 75%. The promotion of employment equity in the labour market has been achieved on 100%, as was protection of vulnerable workers, as well as the strengthening of multilateral and bilateral relations. The strengthening of occupational safety protection showed a performance of 83%, and then the next two was lying at a performance level of 50%, promotion of sound labour relations, as well as the monitoring the impact of legislation. And then lastly, administration, the strengthening the institutional capacity of the department was still lying on a performance level of 60%, an overall performance level of 79% for the department for quarter four. If we look at slide 61 on page 31, quarter four performance per program, 2016-17, here we have it broken down to branch or program. Firstly, administration, the 60% overall performance. Inspection and enforcement services has increased their performance to 93%. Public employment services have improved to 75%. And labour policy and industrial relations, the performance there has gone up to 67%, which has resulted in a 79% performance for the department in quarter four. On page 32, slide 63, the heading is a comparative analysis between quarter 3 and 4 for 16-17. You will see that administration, as I have alluded to earlier, has stayed on a performance level of 60% for the two quarters. Inspection and enforcement services have improved their performance from 86 to 93% for the two quarters. Public employment services, there's been an improvement from 63 to 75% between quarter three and four, and then our labour policy and industrial relations, an improvement from 60% in quarter three to a performance level of 67. Chairperson, that's going to take us now to the areas of non-achievement, and I think members will realise that as I go through, it's the same areas of non-achievement as we had in quarter three. The first area of non-achievement on page 33 is slide 65, Program 1, Administration. This is again the impact. Previously you will recall that the action plan could not be developed because we received the report late. And here we have not managed to achieve. We have received the report and we were expected to have 55% of our standards at level 3 and 4. The department achieved only on a 32% level. And the department has developed the action plan now and make sure, and I'm tracking this on a regular basis to ensure that we achieve this indicator. The next indicator that we have not achieved is a new one on page slide 67, which would be page 34. Still administration. Here it is the payment of invoices. Honourable members will know that we have to pay all our invoices within 30 days. Unfortunately, we have managed to pay only 99.9%. I think there were 6 invoices that we have not paid within the 30 days. And this means that we have not achieved this indicator. That takes care of administration. If you will allow me now to move directly to the other presentation. In terms of Program 2, Inspection and Enforcement Services, there was only one area of non-achievement, which was on slide 38. Oh, sorry, page 38, slide 75. and the heading is IAS. It is 3.5, the key performance indicator there. The OHS amendment bill had to be submitted. We have done our part. We were waiting for the bill from the PME with a required certificate for us to proceed further. And if I understand, this has now been processed. But at that time, again, we did not meet the time frames as we set in our annual performance plan. That takes care of inspection and enforcement services. Again, there's the provincial detail as was requested by the committee on a previous occasion. I'm going to move to public employment services now, and that would be on page 48, slide number 95. The heading of the slide says PES, or public employment services. Again, the areas of non-achievement were the same as in quarter three. The private employment agencies, temporary employment agencies, where we've had 83% of applications not processed, processed within 60 days. And the reason here is exactly the same, that the verification processes which caused us to not keep to the time frames. And then the applications for foreign nationals, corporate visas, this one is 36%, which were processed, the same as with the previous quarter. The administrative processes often cause this delay. Then we have the unpacking of public employment services per province, as well as additional information for public employment services on pages 52 and 53 for members to see. The next program would be that of LP and IR, Labour Policy and International Relations, on page 56. Slide 111, and Chairperson, cricket fans amongst us will say this is a bad number. I think they've got some story about batters often going out on triple one. But this is the area of collective agreements which have to be extended. It's also a new area of non-achievement. Percentage of collective agreements extended within 90 calendar days of receipt. We have not achieved this. We have only extended 75%. 8 were received and only 6 were processed within the 90 calendar days. And this again, the delays, the obtaining of the documentation from the applicants and the processing of that. We often find that documents are received and not all documents are received, or documents, some of the documents are not correct, but we date stamp them and then the clock starts ticking. So we have requested the bargaining councils for the proper documentation. Then the next area of non-achievement here would be on slide 114, which is on the very next page, page 57. This one is again the same as for quarter three, the research reports, which were not done as per the time frames they were done, but they were done after the expected time frames. Chairperson, this takes care of the Department of Labour's performance for quarter four, the areas of non-achievement. If you will allow me now to go to supported employment enterprises. And it's on slide four, the summary. There, thank you. Here I have a summary of overview of the performance of the enterprises for the four quarters of the year. And you will see that we have achieved in quarter one, they have achieved 63% of the indicators. Quarter two, 75% of the indicators were achieved. In quarter three, 75%, and then in quarter four, 50% of the indicators were achieved. If I can look then at supported employment enterprises, the areas of non-achievement. The first one would be on page 7, or slide 122. I'm not sure whether you have one presentation or the two separate presentations, so I'm going to just give the numbers I have as well as the numbers on the board for members. So if you have the separate one, it's page 7 of supported of SEE, and then as I say, slide 122 of the document. Not achieved, the first one was the percentage increase in the gross profit margin had to be increased to 40%. There was non-achievement, in fact there was a 265% gross loss. the change in the accounting treatment as production cost is absorbed fully by COS, cost of sales, and this is an area of great concern to us. The next area of non-achievement would be advocacy campaigns, where 8 campaigns had to be conducted, or 2 product exhibitions had to be conducted at the end of quarter 3. Only 1 exhibition was conducted. The reason here for the other one not being done was that the product exhibition was cancelled due to a lack of inadequate space where the SEE products had to be shown. The next area of non-achievement in quarter 3, those were the 3 areas of non-achievement in quarter 3. If you will allow me now to go to quarter 4 for SEE, slide 11 with me, and then it is the slide which starts with supported employment enterprises, quarterly monitoring report quarter 4, January to March 2017, not achieved, again it's the increase of sales. The increase of sales and goods production performance norms and standards had to be developed by the end of March. These were not developed and implemented. The implementation plans and controls to ensure the documentation monitoring of production norms and standards will be developed to ensure that this matter is attended to. The next one would be on slide 127 or page 12 of the report of the SEE. And this is the effective and efficient financial management. 50% of identified audit findings had to be resolved. At the time of reporting, at the end of quarter 4, only 31% of these were resolved. And the remaining findings were dependent on verifications of the annual financial statements by the Auditor General. And the audit action plan will be updated as soon as the final report is received from the Auditor General. Then on page 14, slide 129, this is to do with internally the development of the workplace skills plan and people attending training as per the workplace skills plan. The indicator there said, the target said 80% of the workplace skills plan had to be implemented by the end of March. This was not achieved. As you can see, just a small percentage of people have attended this training, and 12 officials attended the first aid training, and 20 officials attended the sign language training in March, and of the 32 of the establishment officials, only 8 people are people with disability who have attended this. And then the correct remedial action plan is to collect the data and to make sure that people to be trained and to ensure that people are sent on training in the new financial year. Jefferson, that takes care of quarter 4 Department of Labour as well as supported employment enterprises quarter 3 and 4. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, there's a report for department and employment. Yes, that's
thanks, Chair. Chair, mine is just to say this is an area that needs assistance because we all want it to perform. And as you were giving the report, there's a lot of areas where they have not achieved. What is in place, DG, to assist the supported employment enterprises? Because they need assistance.
Honourable Bokhrein,
thank you. As in handbag. Thank you for that report. Obviously, and in line with Honourable Liwe, I think we're all on the same page. Supported employment enterprises need to be boosted. It's vital for our country. It's vital for the people. And we are a caring country. So I don't think I can take issue with anything, but obviously we need to keep trying and pushing as hard as possible. That's a comment with regard to SEE. And hopefully it's taken from whence it comes. And it's something that the country needs. We need to do it for people. Just to go backwards a little bit to the, I think it was page 56 and 57, I again can't see, I think it's your number, 111, which you referred to. You made the request to the bargaining councils for proper documentation and timely submission of requests. Obviously, I mean, only 8 received. First of all, there's nothing, absolutely nothing. I'm not even sure why it's so small and what the story is behind that. But for the bargaining councils to not give you proper documentation, I understand with the NEIBC, they've fallen apart completely. I presume they're actually bankrupt. But is it not for the department to somehow have some oversight over the bargaining councils? If we're going to read it's a request to the bargaining council proper, I would demand. Because, I mean, their very existence is in line with the Department of Labor. Otherwise, what's it all about? And it's indicative. If the bargaining councils can't get their documentation timelessly and properly done, it's indicative of what's going on. And I think the MEIBC is an example of how radically wrong it can go. I can just give you an insight into that, and that there are people from the MEIBC that are waiting 2 years for an arbitration to be heard. It's taken the CCMA now to bail them out and actually now start doing some arbitrations for them and to start actually looking into the myriad of problems. I'm sure when your colleague from the CCMA speaks to us, he'll tell us about a bag of worms he opened up. Don't let it happen in these examples that you've actually referred to in slide 111. I now know why cricketers are worried about that number. Certainly that's a worrying look at it. On page 57, on slide number, well, I can't tell you. Ah, there, 114. Again, not achieved only 2 final research reports. One thing that you looked at was the training layoff scheme, and you referred to it. And as the DG knows, I have complained in previous meetings in this body that the training layoff scheme seems to have not been taken up by anyone in reality. That's a real drop in the ocean. And assessing the impact of the scheme, I mean, we should all know by now that it's been such a failure, it's almost unbelievable. I don't know how much money we've spent on, first of all, the schemes in the first place, and second of all, the assessments, when again, we could have used that money for all sorts of other, even for supported employment enterprises or for inspectorates. Again, I just think it's such a waste of time the unions haven't taken it up. But thank you for bearing with me. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you for your
Thank you, Chair. I would like to ask the CEO of the Sheltered Employment Enterprises to supported employment enterprises to just provide responses, and thereafter Mr. Seafield on the bargaining councils and the research reports.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the honourable members. A specific question related to the provision of assistance to the entity could be reduced in my response to 2 strategic issues. The first one relates to external dependencies. External dependencies as they relate to the fact that the entity on its own, and honorable members would have acknowledged this, that it provides employment opportunities to persons with disabilities, and for that reason encourages the creation, therefore, of a caring and a developmental state. Now, in that regard, the assistance that we require from the department and the state are guaranteed long-term contracts from the National Treasury, the ability to have from the National Treasury an allocation for quite a number of years with regards to various government contracts, so that the entity could on its own generate more revenue, and secondly, that the entity create more employment opportunities for persons with disabilities. So what we require is continuous engagement with the National Treasury with regards to an allocation for the entity. So that's one aspect. The second aspect, Chair, relates to the nature of the business. And we currently engage in the Department of Labor to say that the structure of the organization must be a structure that reflects the fact that the business is a trading entity, as opposed to as opposed to any other government department, and therefore the structure that you put in place and the capacity that you provide to the entity must be business orientated. So we're attempting to do that so that the available posts in the entity and how the structure is geared, how the entity is geared towards an entity that's business orientated rather than an entity that functions like any other government department. So you would require quite a number of things in engaging with the department with regards to delegations, et cetera, so that the decision-making process in the entity is a decision-making process that's not exactly the same as any other government department, but a decision-making process that ensures that if a decision with regards to business has got to be made today, that process is facilitated such that we don't lose out opportunities out there. So those are two major strategic issues that we're currently engaging with the department, so that the focus and the orientation of the entity is completely different from other government departments, but there is a better appreciation in the department that we are, with regards to supported employment enterprises, dealing with a business. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, DG. Maybe just also to give members a sense in terms of the assistance that the department is providing to the SCE. I think the first one is on the strategic support in terms of the legal, the policies, and so on. But also on the structure, the DG was generous to also allocate, given the challenges at SCE, two directors to assist the entity. Obviously, there is an acknowledgement that they needed more, but also to review the structure. That's why we now have a CFO at SCE. On the admin support side, a lot was done to take away the burden of salaries, the administration of pensions from the SCE, and integrate those with that of the department, and the administration has become simpler. It has now only been reduced to factory workers, and we are looking at mechanisms around how best so that they can focus more on business and not necessarily on the admin aspect. And there has been delegations to take away the whole question of decision making at the department, so that they can have their own supply chain processes and human resources. And I think the department and the minister in particular played a major role in the marketing of SCE and securing business for the organization through the open days that we hold, and members are also welcome to visit the minister's office in this building, I mean in Parliament, where the SCE is having a display of, in terms of the kind of furniture that we are selling to government departments, including individuals, and I'm sure the chief of staff will be able to guide you to the office on the 12th floor, where we have units that are on display, and during the various budget votes with and job fairs, we always make sure that the marketing is done. Now the DG has also issued a directive to both the department and entities in terms of procurement of furniture, that the first point of call is the FEE. And that's where we do, obviously, given the demand, we now have a situation where the entity and given the kind of people that work there has challenges in terms of delivery in other areas. But I think the whole question of procurement is directed towards this entity. And we have also secured National Treasury approval for the entity to charge 50% upfront, because previously we were delivering units to departments and thereafter we struggled to get payments. And now with the 50% upfront payment, we are able to reduce debts that the departments are used to owe the entity. So these are some of the things. Obviously, this package is not enough, but we continue, like the CEO is saying, to engage on a regular basis on how best to assist the entity, not only in terms of what they produce, but also our interest is to see the entity expanding in terms of the numbers of people with disabilities that are employed in factories in the 7 provinces. We are also looking at 2 more provinces, but also expanding the current capacity. And we also have a project with the Algerians where we are also looking at diversifying the kind of products that the factories are producing, especially in the health sector, so that we move with times and we are able to produce products that will remain, that will ensure that the factories remain viable. So those are just some of the examples of the kind of assistance that the department continues to provide to the entity. Thanks, DG.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Just to answer to some of the questions that Mr. Bagram has raised in relationship to the bargaining councils and as well as to the research reports in terms of the training layer scheme, then, and I want to focus firstly on the bargaining council issue. As the Honorable Member would know, the law doesn't allow us to return an application for an extension of an agreement to a party if the application is incomplete. We seek to ensure that the information that we receive from the bargaining council is as complete as possible in order for the minister to apply in mind in terms of the extension of collective agreement. Further on, you would also recall that we reported in this committee that there is a sort of a gap in the legislation which we wish to my apologies. Which to amend as we go forward in terms of the amendment process to the LRA going forward is that what the law does is it allows the minister to publish when she extends to non-parties she has the opportunity to publish a notice requiring input into the process for extension. What it does not allow is to extend the period for the department to deal with the application, and the amendment to the legislation seeks to extend this period to take cognizance of the fact that the minister can now extend a collective agreement to non-parties where the parties are not representative in in terms of. So that's the one thing that we wanted to do. The issue that you've raised in relationship to having broader oversight over the bargaining council, we agree totally with the view, honourable member, and that we're just extending our oversight responsibilities with respect to the bargaining councils. You would recall that I have a problem in my throat, my apologies. You would recall that we reported in this committee also that we received additional funding from the from Treasury for the CCMA to assist with the dispute resolution function within the MEIVC, and I think that worked properly. The MEIVC, as you know, in terms of court order, has been placed under administration currently, and we hope that process will, in a sense, rescue the bargaining council from going under. In fact, the recent report I got is that the bargaining council is functioning more effectively now than before. So the process is working, Chair, Honourable Chair, and I think that's the issue. With respect to the training layoff scheme, Honourable Member, I think the research report, and my central question was not in relationship to the lateness of the report or the fact that we needed to apply different methodologies in order to get information because of the take-up of the training layoff scheme that is so scant, but it's more a question around whether it's effective or not. And as a result of that, with the research that we're trying to complete is to determine exactly that, so that on an empirical basis we make a decision at the Department of Labor and the government going forward in terms of the training layoff scheme.
Thank you, and thank you, members, for the inputs on the presentation made, and the department for clarity in various areas that needed clarity. And we will be going to the presentation for by conversation fund. How far, how far is your final lunch? You will alert us what have you requested so we can still continue. Is the tea outside? So yes, we will not break members and the officials. You can just quietly go out and get yourself tea or coffee and come back. But we'll just I don't know if you are ready. Our conversation fund is ready.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. I think we'll go straight to slide 5 and 6, which is on page 3 of your handout. Chair, what these slides is just a indication of the summary of the high level performance of the fund over the last over the four quarters of the financial year 2016-17. Members will note that we have achieved about 50% of the targets that we have set for ourselves for the financial year, broken down in between the 25% for the one strategic objective that relates to providing efficient and effective client-oriented support service, and about 70% of the targets that are related to our core business of the fund, which is providing a faster, reliable, and accessible core services. So if we go to slide 8, which is page 4 of the handout, where we then look at the detail. When we look at the performance of the fund, the strategic objective, for the first objective of providing effective and client-oriented support, we had 6 indicators that we had set for the financial year, and about for quarter 3, and then we had about 17% of these had been achieved. I will go through the reasons later in my presentation, and then on the providing fast and reliable and accessible COIP services, we had achieved about 70% of the of these 10 plant indicators that we have set for ourselves. In the next slide on page 5, it just shows the same information per each of the three programs we have within the fund. The first one, which is the administration program, which has achieved 17% of the plant indicators. On program 2, which relates to the core business from a head office point of view, about 60% of the targets of the indicators had been achieved out of the 5 indicators that we had set for the quarter. And when it comes to the provincial operations, which is also still part of the core business of the fund, 80% of the indicators, of the 5 indicators that we had set for the quarter were achieved. The next page, page 6, which is slide 11, we look at the same information for quarter 4. Members will note an improvement on the fifth strategic objective of providing an effective and efficient client service support. The out of the 8 plant indicators that we had set for quarter 4, 6 of these have not been achieved, which is 25% achievement. And on the providing fast and reliable and accessible quiet services, we maintained our performance of about 70% of the targets that had been set. We achieved 7 out of the 10 that we had set for the quarter. The same information on the next slide, just showing it per each of the programs that we have within the fund. It's 25% for administration, 60% for the head office portion of the operations, and about 80% for the provincial office portion of the operations. If we go to slide 21, which is in page 11, Chair, of the handout, the rest of the information between page 6 and page 11 is the same information provided in terms of broken down per province and detailing the areas where we've achieved, what has been the achievement. Perhaps what's important to note is that for the by the end of quarter 4, we had paid about 4.2 billion rand in claims for the year. On page 11, it just shows the how the programs have performed compared to the budget. We had a 50% achievement of the indicators against a 61% spend of the budget of the fund. That's what page slide 21, which is in page 11, shows. Chair, if we go to slide 23, which is in page 12, that's where I can start talking to the areas where we have not achieved. The first one, which is part of the administration program, which is the support service, one of the first things that we had not was making sure that the audit plan is approved by year end. This was not done. The audit committee had requested some additional information that then the internal audit had to work through and make sure that they present at the next meeting, which was the first meeting at the beginning of the 2017-18 financial year in May. Another target that we did not achieve was to increasing the investment income by CPI plus 2. However, for the year, our portfolio only returned less than the target rate of 8.28%. We only achieved about 7.17%, and this is largely related to how the markets have performed over the last year. On slide 25, which is page 13, talks to the number of findings that we had targeted to reduce that had been identified by the AG in prior years. We had not cleared the 21 findings as we had targeted. This is largely due to the approach that we took, that rather we want to deal with the root causes of the challenges as opposed to just clearing the findings and the same problems occurring again in the next audit cycle. So the action plan that we usually present to the committee details the action steps that we've decided to take to deal with the root causes of these findings. On slide 26, Chair, these were the issues that were affecting the audit report as well, and also that has not been achieved. It's linked to the items that we're doing on the action plan. On page 14 of the handout, which is slide 27, the reviewal of the compensation benefit, the target here was to make sure that these are gazetted by the end of March 2017, which is the end of the financial year. However, these were only published early in April, the beginning of April, so we just missed the publishing target by a few days. However, this was done, it's just that it was done early in the financial year. The other item which relates to the program two or the core business program was the improving the management of litigation cases and hearings that we have, where people usually lodge an objection against the decision taken with regard to their claims. We wanted to make sure that here we have an electronic case management system implemented so that this project becomes effective. However, at the end of the financial year, we were still in the early stages of the project and we had not finalized it. It's something that we had set for ourselves to make sure that it's implemented by the end of the first semester of the 2017-18 financial year. The next slide also, Chair, the last slide, which is on page 15, slide 29, also talks to the percentage of compensation benefits finalized within the current year. We had set a target of 85%. However, 73% of these had been achieved by end of quarter four. And part of the thing that contributes to the slow rate in finalizing the compensation claims is the fact that for you to actually do the final payments and the approvals, you need banking details, you need to have some of the information. And if you look at some of the claims are so old that the banking details that would have been provided by clients would not be valid. And as a result, we are unable to pay some of these claims. However, there are continuing enhancements processes in the fund to make sure that we get updated banking details and also get updated information of clients continuously, as opposed to waiting for at the time when we have to process a claim. Chair, I would end my presentation there. The rest of the slides, it just shows the types of injuries that we processed over the financial year. I think by end of quarter four, we had dealt with about 155,427 claims. And then the next slide just provides a breakdown of the province, provides the breakdown of the different type of injury that we dealt with, as well as at which industries were these injuries from. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, the details in a report and that we also have in our with us as well. So I'm sure if you have any questions, it will be in the Honorable Bodio and then followed by Honorable Bekram. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let's welcome the report, knowing where compensation fund is coming from. In fact, I just want to indicate that the performance on the provision of an effective and efficient client-oriented support service, yes, is improving, but the pace is a bit slow. The second question and the last one is, what is the problem with Northern Cape? Because wherever provinces are tabulated, you find that Northern Cape is the worst performer. What is the challenge there? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Bekram.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the report. I want to preface with what I'm there to say with statement to say that I know how hard you're working and that you place some very competent and hard-working people in the system. So, and I thank you for that, because I must admit that I write to you at least every half hour and I'm at least getting some responses. But while I'm sitting here, I've just had from one of the people that I wrote you about saying that we've still not had any responses. There's people trying to register for workman's compensation. And that's indicative of, unfortunately, the enormous mountain of work that you've inherited. And I am sitting here almost begging you to consider trying to get the backlog outsourced. Because that's going to always, and it's going to always be with you, it's almost like a hunchback that you're walking with, that you inherited from the past. There's been 20 years of inactivity and you've inherited it, and it's very sad to see someone who might have his back broken because of that past. And so I look at this and I say, unless you can catch up with the past, you're never going to be able to get the future sorted out properly. I know that you are quite effective in sorting out current complaints coming in and sorting out current claims that are coming in. And I know that because I've seen it, but somehow the registration of new people is a real problem, and somehow your employment systems in the department, it's not working somehow. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. Maybe the computer system is still not functional. Maybe people aren't able to work it properly, or we can blame the system. So that's the first comment I make, and maybe you want to comment on it, but I'm just still not seeing that turnaround coming about. It's catching up with the past, and I think that's hobbled it to a large degree. I also know that the Minister of Labour reported recently that you've uncovered an enormous fraud in the department, and that you have suspended, I don't know what it is, I think it's 30 people. Maybe you can let us know the figures, and that you also, those are suspended people, that you've also fired a group of people recently. Maybe you can tell us a bit about it, because I think it's important to hear about it, because I think that's part of the problem of you not reaching your targets over here. It's the whole series of staff. It wasn't one or two people who had committed the fraud. This looks like an entire ring in workmen's compensation, and hence you're not getting the achievement of the targets, I think, because I can't see anything wrong with your work, sir, but I can see that you're not achieving the targets that you set. You're reporting to us that you're getting 25% or 17% of the targets that you set. There's something wrong with that, and maybe you can share it with us. Just in terms of the, at the end of your report, you really happily gave us the injuries registered per province, and you got the grand total of 155,427. Is that for just this quarter, or is it the two quarters? I'm not sure. You didn't say what year it is. And if that's the case, have the injuries at work risen, or have they stagnated? What's actually happening? They're somehow not telling us a story. It's just a figure, and maybe you could just share that with us. Maybe I'm just not able to understand the graph properly. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'm noting you when I was on America. The question of the message that you have just received on Rabo Papua, we're not going to entertain you because we don't have details of that question. We don't know when this person complained, what processes has he gone through, where is he, all that we don't know. And you yourself saying that you are working very good with the commissioner. So I'll suggest that you do what you always do, channel that so that you can get, he can look for proper records, why that person is not been sorted, not yet, really. Unless you were coming with a complaint yourself that there is this person who went to your department and that myself went to you about this issue, and today you were not able to resolve. Well, but that one, let's give it a chance, do it in a different way. Yes, but then do it. If you have personal complaint about it, I think then in the same manner that you complained with the, to the commissioner, do it. And then when you are not getting satisfaction to the commissioner, then you can then say you have given up. Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, ma'am. I want to agree with my colleague in terms of the achievement with regard to Program 1. The explanatory slide speaks to the audit environment and the committee and return investment. But it doesn't adequately explain to me, at least, as to why do we have that low level of achievement within program one. So I would like to know, Mr. Mafata, whether there might possibly be a causal link between the low level of achievement of program one vis-a-vis the outcomes and the achievements with regard to program two and three, which is the core business, as you rightly stated. The long and the short of it is that if we have raised the level of achievement with regard to program one, would we possibly have achieved a higher achievement rate with regard to the core functions of your department? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the Northern Cape, the question of the Northern Cape, it would be a combination of skills as well as the ability of the fund to be able to attract the right skills in those areas. When the fund decentralized to the different provinces, there was not a lot of officials that were transferred to the Northern Cape. So as a result, most of the establishment in the Northern Cape is staffed with the with new officials. So it has taken us some time to get the Northern Cape stable in terms of getting the officials that have been appointed adequately skilled. They still get a lot of support from head office. It's one of the reasons why the performance has been low. Though the performance is steadily going up as we getting the officials correctly skilled in terms of the functions and process of the fund. The issues around the, I think we've successfully dealt with the majority of the old backlogs that we had, especially around claims. Most of the claims that we're dealing with now, it's current claims, or if it's old claims, it's information where, for example, we wouldn't have had information and so on about the claim. What still is the big challenge, though, is the area around registration of employers and issues around ROEs and so on. And there is a project that the fund is busy with, the development of an electronic platform for employers to be able to register online, to be able to submit their return of earnings online, and be able to pay with minimal human involvement in there, because a lot of the current process is a bit complex, as well as it's too labor intensive as well in terms of getting the required turnaround times. And often in the we deal with, employers are always trying to find a way of how not to pay their assessment fees or to pay the required assessment fees, because the levies that employers pay to the comp fund are risk-based. Employers in high-risk areas would pay much higher levies than employers who are working in low-risk areas. But you always have this phenomenon of everyone trying to pay as little as they can. And when you usually find these red flags, these are some of the things that always contribute to delays in registration or in making sure that the employers get the required letters of good standing, because we often then have to involve inspectors. We also have to send to go and audit an employer to check if the information that is giving is factual. And usually, oftentimes, when the information that is given is not factual, it results in some of these frustrations on employers, because it then delays the way they do things. We're hoping that with an electronic platform, we'll be able to have those automated checks with CIPC and with the UIF and so on, so that at least when the employer registers, we get the right information firsthand. We don't have to have this back and forth and having to require to audit employers, because we know most of the queries we get around employers is mainly around those issues. So there is some work that has gone into making sure that we also start cleaning up that process on the employer side. The recent suspension, yes, it is true. We, in April, we identified a possible fraudulent interception of claims. We then instituted a preliminary investigation, and the officials, there's about 35 officials, both at head office as well as in provincial offices, where we that had been involved in those transactions, not necessarily to say that they had been involved in the fraud. So we placed them on precautionary suspension to allow the preliminary investigation to take place. They were on 60-day preliminary suspension. They have now come back to employment, but the into the fund, but the investigation is ongoing. At this stage, we're unable to say what is the extent of the fraud, who are the officials involved, if there are any officials, and who are the third parties that are involved. I think the investigation will then reveal all that so that we can then be able to take appropriate action. We're hoping to have the investigations finalized before the end of July so that we can then take the necessary steps that needs to be taken. The issue of whether is there something wrong with us not being able to, there must be something wrong that is making us not to achieve the targets that we've set. Well, we've already said that the fund is not adequately structured to be able to fulfill its mandate. And it's one of the reasons why we embarked on a project to review the way that we are functionally structured. We have recently obtained approval of the restructuring of the fund. We are now currently in the process of implementing that restructured compensation fund, which would then consist of the three core areas of the fund, which is your pensions and then compensation benefits, your medical services business, as well as the rehabilitation business, so that we can then have a focused approach to each of the elements of the fund. So we, and also because most of the things that would have led to us not being able to achieve the some of the administration targets would be that inappropriate structuring of the fund in terms of not having skills in certain areas where we require those skills. So with the reviewed structure, I think it will enable us to be able to then have a focus in that area, and we will see then that change or the turnaround in terms of the achievement of the targets. Now, if you look at most of the targets that were there, for example, related to addressing the audit issues, and what we've said is that some of the main issues that have been raised by the AG that have led to the fund getting disclaimer audit opinions, a lot of these issues are deep seated issues that would require us to be able to deal with the root causes, because it would be an easy job to just deal with the finding that the AG raises and we pat ourselves in the back and say that we've achieved it, but when they come back again the following year they would still find the same thing, because we would have dealt with that they found, but not necessarily have dealt with the root causes. If they sample a different transaction, they will still find the same thing. And it's one of the reasons why when we developed the action plan, we said we needed to, as a first step of the turnaround, let's deal with the root causes of the challenges that we have, so that we can sort of like, you know, stop the leaking tap. And only once we've stopped the leaking tap, do we then go back and check what is it that caused the leak. And I think we, from the beginning of this financial year, at least now we can be able to get to that point where we're saying now we've stopped, we've dealt with the root, with the basic issues that were causing the problem, and now how do we go back and clean up the past issues that the AG has raised about our areas of revenue, our claims, and our control environment, and so on. So that's the next part of the journey for the fund. And I think with the increased capacity as a result of the new structure, it's going to then enable us to be able to then go back and clean up even the past issues, so that when the Auditor General comes as well, they then be able to see the progress with regard to the things that they raised in the past, not necessarily only the fact that we've stopped the rot going forward. So there is no causal link, Honorable America, in terms of the achievement in the low achievement in Program 2 and 3 with Program 1, because those are separate things. I think Program 1 was mainly issues around audit, and if you look at it, a lot of the others are more administrative issues. When do you publish your benefit improvements, the issues of the internal audit, as well as the dealing with the audit issues. Whereas on the Program 2 and 3, we're basically focusing on the claims and the claims environment solely. think I've responded to all the questions. Oh, the injuries, yes. That's the, I think the 155,000 is the total for the year, total claims that we have received for the year. It's a slight increase from the last year, because last year we had about 129,000. But if you compare it to, if you compare it to the previous years, which is 2013, 14, 14, 15, the average was around 300,000. Now, so it's a combination of reduced claims, and also the fact that in the past years, we're dealing with the backlogs of the past as well. So you would have had a lot of claims that would have been from the past. So it's an indication that we basically, most of the claims we're dealing with are current claims.
No, thanks. No more questions. And thank you very much, Commissioner. I think I like what you are saying. You are owing us an update on your action plan. Definitely next term you'll be able to come. This time we were not able to fit you in our schedule, because it will help us to understand the root causes that you have dealt with that will make a change in the in Auditor General's report. So I like the fact that you are saying if you can just deal with them, just on top, it will be easy, but then you still go back to square one. It will be good for us to understand, so that by the time that report comes out, at least we have been following it, we understand where you are. So thank you so much. We still have time. We have CCMA. Over to you. Over to the director. Okay.
Honourable members and chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. We will follow the same route as my colleagues and told. We're not going to be presenting all the slides. We'll get to the bottom line in just a few areas of emphasis that we just wanted to make, and then that will be the end of the presentation. As a start, maybe Chair, let's proceed to slide number 7. For the third quarter of performance of the CPNA. Chairperson, the bottom line of the third quarter of the performance of the CCMA is that we, out of 21 targets, we managed to achieve 18. We could not achieve 3, and that gives us an overall performance of 86%. Hold on. Sorry. We have a total performance of 86% for the CCMA for the third quarter. I will just quickly deal with those that are not achieved, which is on page 8, the next page. Page 8. On page 8, Chairperson, it's only 3 targets that were not achieved. It's important that I note that the targets that were not achieved, it's not because there's not been work done. Work was actually done. In particular, if you look at the first one on the rollout of the case management system, this program, page. We'll do that. It's page 8. Do I say the slide? Okay, so I say slide 8. Slide 8. Okay, sorry, I apologize. The rollout of the case management system, this program, Chairperson, is extremely, extremely important, because this is our direct link with the DOL offices where we roll out the case management system. But I'm happy to announce that in the fourth quarter, this target was achieved. So we did roll out the case management system to the DOL offices that are identified there, and then the program will then continue from there. And then the one which was really not easy to achieve because of the way the target was drafted, The biggest mistake that was made in the drafting of that target was that the target is intended to be achieved in 1 year, yet it's a 5-year plan. So we could not change it. So the AG said, there's no way that you can then, whatever you've done, whatever you would have planned ordinarily to be performed in those targets would not matter because it said it should have been done in 1 year, instead of 5 years. So, but everything else that was planned to be done was done, but technically because of that, the drafting of that target, we could not achieve it. And then also the last one, which is the procurement plan. This is a very complex one. Complex in the sense that it is dependent on a number of factors. Amongst those, it's service providers. And the other factor is the committees that we have that needs to sit and deliver on that procurement plan. So as a result of that, we only achieved 60% instead of the 80% which was targeted. So these are the only three targets that we could not achieve as a result of that, with one in the fourth quarter that has been achieved. If we go to slide number 9. Slide number 9, Chairperson, we drafted it this way because it assists to show the progression in the performance of the concession. There's two parts there, which is 2015-2016, and on the right-hand side, it is the 2016-2017. This comparative we're doing just to show how the concession has performed in 2016-2017 as well. So in 2015-16, you will see that if you look at the third quarter of 15-16, we were sitting at 84%. But that result was the old one, which was not audited. It was before we introduced the concept of auditing results. But if you look at 16-17 and the third quarter, it has moved to 86%. But those are the audited results that you see from our internal auditor now currently with the AG. So that's the progressive progression in terms of the performance in the third quarter. If we proceed to quarter four, which is the overall, the bottom line, Chairperson, here, out of 33 targets that were set, we were not only able to achieve three. If you go to page 11, because quarter four incorporates overall. If you go to page 11, that's slide 11, at the top, which was really problematic, is what we call the industry sustainability process. This one is when we choose a sector and try to see if this innovation of sustaining an industry will work. It was just an innovation that we thought, even though it looked difficult, that we could achieve that. So while all the terms and references were agreed and the paper and the pulp and paper sector was nominated as the one that we're going to use to do this industry sustainability instrument, we were hit by a strike at the sector, which then hindered the performance of the target. So we could not do it because of the result of that. But everything else seems to be working so far. We'll continue to try to use this tool because it's a very important tool for purpose of sustaining the different sectors that we have. If the tools we've designed really work, we are very exploring on that. We will then continue to apply them in the different sectors so that we can sustain different industries. And there's a possibility of failure as well, because in the main, it is dependent on the uptake from those that we invite to participate in the program. So the success of it not only depends on the mechanics of the industry, but largely depends on the uptake and consent we get from those that we nominate to work with us so that we can see if this product works. So far, we cannot say for sure whether it works or not because of that supervening impossibility. The second one, Chair, we've been reporting this one throughout. I've just explained it a lot. Also, in the last quarter, on the talent management and succession, is the one which is a 5-year plan, but we were supposed to do that in 1 year, so that's the only reason. With the procurement plan, I think I've explained that too. It's still the same factor. If you proceed to page 12, slide 12, this is just an annual comparative where we were. In 2015-16, we were sitting at 76% performance. And in 2016-2017, we are sitting at 91%. in terms of progression. I must indicate to a person that this progression may look that, but it was done under very difficult circumstances, because it was the first year also when I started, and when we started we had two forensic reports that we had to implement, we had disciplinary hearings after proceeding, we had retirements, we had resignations, and we had others going on medical boarding. Ronald Pernicott, because he was identified as a member of our executive, he was diagnosed with cancer, and I'm sad to announce that even though he did not fill his position for last year, yesterday we got the news that he passed away as a result of cancer. And I think when he went for radiation, it caused a heart attack. We visited him a couple of weeks, about 3 or 4 times here in Cape Town to see how he's doing. And we did not fill the position because it was in temporary boarding. We just asked some of our team to act. And then we got the news that he passed away. And one of our employees also was in the supply chain, which works in the same department that deals with the procurement, was also diagnosed with a stomach cancer, and a day before yesterday also died as a result of the same cancer. We have a senior commissioner who is working with us in the legal department. He's been in coma for in ICU for the past 6 weeks because of cancer as well. He's sitting there in hospital. We have our senior commissioner also who, now in the past 3 weeks, who also of heart attack, who passed away in Johannesburg. So it's those kind of things that you have to deal with. So despite all of that, and also having to appoint a completely new team at the executive level, we've managed to present on those different trying times to get to 91% to make sure that we deliver excellent service to our users. If you proceed to slide number 13, our continued Achilles is the increasing caseload. Honorable members, I know that I may be sounding like a broken record on the increased caseload, but now we are sitting at 188,000 cases per hour. And part of the solution that we are doing in dealing with that, it is finding strategies and methods of dispute prevention that we are now implementing. I think I'll talk a bit about that. We are still doing well in terms of our turnaround time in dealing with our conciliations. We were on average at 23 days, now we're sitting on 24 days, but the set target is 30 days, despite that heavy caseload. And on our arbitration again, we're still on within the 60 days, which is set to be 60 days. And this one is always a difficult one because sometimes parties postpone, but on average we are meeting that target. And then also, as far as the public interest matters, we are sitting there. We did 143 of those in terms of Section 150. This is where, even if a case is not referred, but there's a public interest strike that is happening, we then get to intervene and offer our services that we make sure that we provide stability in the labor market. And our settlement rate, as far as the cases that are brought to the CCMA, is still sitting at 74%. So we still think we're doing well in that regard. And then if you go to the right-hand side of that slide, you will see that our capacity building programs are still continuing. And so after the fourth quarter, we have done 53,336 of those countrywide. You will see in the next slide where the spread is on where we've been and where we've been training and the numbers that we've trained. One of the greatest successes, Chairperson, I'll show how it contributes into the outcomes of government, is the job saving. I must just mention that the figures that are reflected are the figures that refers to cases that are referred to the CCMA. It does not necessarily cater for cases that have not been referred to us. So out of the 48,000 jobs at stake, we've managed to save 25,000 of those cases that came before the Commission, which in our view, it is a remarkable achievement in that if you can save one job, then you are making a difference. If you can save 25,000, then you are having a direct impact into the labor market. So that is what we've managed to do. We've also had people who are aggrieved. We have about 530 of those complaints that we've received. But in the main, Chairperson, those complaints have to do with people are not happy with the outcomes of council decisions, reviews and rulings, and some of them perception of biasness, and others it's about being made to settle and things like that. So, but we've attended to all of those complaints that we've received. They keep coming, and we can't stop them from coming. So the name of the strategy of the CCMA says it is the central mechanism, meaning that we must make the difference in the people that we serve. And if you look at slide number 15, it also is synchronized with the outcomes of and the triple crisis of government. If you look at outcome 4, in our view, the Chairperson, we submit that the facilitations that we do before, during, and post-wage negotiations, they continue to contribute into the labor market stability, especially with regards to the public structure that we engage in. And we are listing some of the sectors that we've been involved in dealing with those matters and how much impact that has had and continues to have in the labor market. And then if you look at the second one, which is the outcome 11 and 14, this is a very important one as well, because we are dealing with a very difficult sector called the sheriffs. Very difficult people to deal with, those ones. Very difficult people to deal with in terms of executing the awards of the CCMA. We still continue to face some challenges there, because at least so far we can say that more than 4,000 of our vulnerable employees whose awards have been issued by us have been assisted through this program to ensure that the awards that are issued by us are being executed. And I'm happy that at least now we have created some very good the strategic partnerships with the Sheriff's Board, so that as we encounter the problems that we have in executing our wards, that they are able to intervene and assist us. So, yeah, so we are doing that. And I must also express our appreciation to the continued support from the Department of Labor, Office of the DG, in ensuring that we continue to provide the resources to those that need them the most in ensuring that the awards are executed. If you proceed to slide number 16, this is an important one, Chairperson. I think if we can succeed in anything that we do other than the capacity build programs, is for us to continue to increase the acceptance rate of the programs that we present that assist in the transformation of the workplaces. And that includes, amongst other things, for example, the workplace, the building workplace relations. I want to make an example, including this House, Parliament. We have been invited at times, Chairperson, when the parties were in serious conflict, that we make some proposals on how we can assist. And we have indeed had some very successful interventions where we have implemented our building workplace programs, where they have managed to produce a result, which you saw last week Friday, where parties are able to engage and discuss meaningfully in ensuring that they resolve disputes, and with the support of the system in the training and giving programs and all that, because it's not all the time that you have to sit with parties and resolve disputes. You have to teach and give instruments for people to be able to resolve their disputes. And I think this House Parliament has benefited from that and will continue to give that support. And also what we do in cases where parties can't do it themselves, like cases that arise from Parliament, we would red flag them. We call them the red lining of cases. Because sometimes, like there's one matter where there was a complaint that the parliamentary staff and the union are not comfortable in having a commissioner that come from Cape Town because of the trust factor. And as a commission, we do understand that if the parties do not have or have doubt about the person who's resolving the dispute, it's not about the institution, it's about the location. I then took it upon myself that we appointed one from our national office, a commissioner that intervenes and deals with that dispute. And we did that. And the matter was successfully concluded between the parties, and then that matter then was put to rest. So it's these type of interventions in those outcomes, just to use that as an example, that we are contributing towards those government outcomes and also into the triple crisis. And also, okay, the awareness problems, I've spoken about that. And it's important also to note, Chairperson, that when it comes to the job-saving program, I listened to my colleagues talking about the job-saving program earlier on. What is critically important for us is that if we can continue at that rate and try to double it, it means, therefore, when we're talking about unemployment and poverty, we are contributing positively. Because if you've got thousands of jobs saved, then it means that you are dealing with that crisis. So it is a very wonderful program that we do together as entities of Dole to make sure that we achieve that. So we're quite excited about that one. The last one there, Chairperson, is on the Outcome 11. Outcome 11 is a very important initiative because when we were the ILO, one of the things that we did there was to ensure that we entertain and engage with some of our SADC countries that are involved in dispute resolution, that do what we do as a commission. And we've been successful in that. I can confirm that on the 18th and 19th of July, the dispute resolution agencies forum will be set up in Durban, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Lesotho, and all of those will be gathering. The idea of doing that is to make sure that we continue to improve even our dispute resolution, not only in South Africa, but also in the SADC countries. And we've been very successful in doing that, and the ILO has also agreed to support that program and fund it to make sure that it happens. Because as the CCMA, what we do is that we contribute into ensuring that, like Swaziland, they're using our case management system, we are training their commissioners. And we were doing that in the other countries as well. So for us to be able to deal with it in a more structured way, we then said we must then continue to establish our SADC dispute resolution and management structure, which is now being resuscitated, spearheaded by the CCMA. So, Chairperson, overall, that is the performance of the CCMA in the third and the fourth quarter. I'll end it at that. If there are any questions, we will take the questions.
Thank you, Director. On behalf of the committee, I would like to send a recovery wish or wishes to those members, officials who are still sick, and condolences to the family of those who have lost their loved ones. And that's it. And may the soul of those who have passed on rest in peace. I think it's I will give to the members to engage on this report. But I must say, DJ, the last one about the intervention in Parliament, we really applaud the strides and the gains that have been made so far, because it has been a difficult process. And indeed, I think what the director is saying about staff not being comfortable in working with some of your officials in the province, it's true. I got that allegation at some stage, and when Mr. Tajane was still in the province, they worked with him very well. And I understand when you have redeployed Mr. Tejani, things went back to square one. They lost confidence. Until then, they met with the director. And then that's why some of the gains have been made. Our committee was also affected in that process. But I think with you, yourself, and the minister, and the CCMA, and all of you, we really appreciate Parliament. We hope that you won't drop them, you continue until all the problems that needs to be sorted are sorted. then committee members. Any questions, clarity? Honorable Buckley? Noted, you, Honorable Lolly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the report. This obviously reassures us as a public that you're doing so well, and thank you very much for that. I mean, just to pick on one little area, the agreement that you have with the Sheriff's Board has been absolutely vital for the public out there, and it certainly has created a lot of reassurance that people will get paid their monies that they never get paid. And if you look at page 6, I think it's slide 12, where you reached your 91% of actual performance, I can only applaud that, quite frankly. I too express our sorrow about people who have passed away and that are very ill. I hope the families are being able to cope with it. In particular, I need to, not because of denigrating anyone else, but I need to mention that Bernie Bernica was probably a giant in the settlement arena in this country. He spent his life in the trade union movement and was someone who I personally have worked with for the last 35 years, and if anyone could get two heads together who are so far apart it's impossible, it was Bernie. He was able to do it. I know my colleague, Mr. America, worked with him at the CCMA, and we express our sorrow, and maybe if you could pass it on to the family, and also if you could tell us where the funeral is, because we know he passed away last night, I think it was last night, and I suspect the funeral will probably be over this weekend or whatever else. If you could let us know, we'd appreciate it, we'd like to be there. Just in terms of some of the reports that you've made, and in particular, I want to just point at your dashboard, the annual dashboard. You said there were 530 complaints. Well, that's absolutely negligible. Absolutely negligible, and I must report, like I did with workman's compensation, when I put out the message on community radio stations, and I did that about the CCMA as well, it was unbelievable about the paucity of complaints I received about that. None. I received none, and I went on to, I think it was 12 radio stations about it. So that in itself, and this is community stations out in Worcester and those areas where you would expect people are unhappy with government institutions, CCMA, they had no complaints whatsoever, so I thought it would be useful to feed that back. Now, I was looking for a complaint, I must admit, but I didn't find that. To hear that there were 530 out of the thousands that you receive almost daily of complaints about the employers, this is absolutely negative. So I need to applaud you for that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Loliwa, and then noted, Honourable Tonjo.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let me start with the bereavement and just make a comment. It's a pity you disclosed the cause of death. Because one then wonders the environment in which the points in which those people they were working, because now that you have mentioned it, though we were not supposed to say it publicly, it's the same cause. So I don't know, DG, in terms of your own OHS, if it is not the area they are working in, if they are in the same section, it's just that it's good we don't have details on the sections they are working in. The second issue is on the rollout plan for case management. Now that the plan has not been developed, what are the implications in terms of your backlog on cases and other things? Are you managing your cases well? Thanks, John.
Thank you, Honorable. No, thank you, Chair. On knowing your rights, Chair, upcoming events, the outreach services, which sectors are you, what can I say, targeting or have visited? I'm particularly interested in a sector, farm workers. It would have been more better for a person who's coming for the first time in the school if there was a breakdown. But as I've said initially, remember that we've got constituency areas. My constituency area is at the Peri-Urban. I'm going to invite you. How should I invite you to go and empower them? So that number would have the interest, which sector has really been interested. And languages, are you using English or a language that is people more familiar with? I would imagine in the Western Cape it would be Afrikaans, in other areas, in Limpopo, I'm looking in Mpumalanga, if you have fresh Mpumalanga. So the issue of language for me is quite a
thank you. Over to you, Director.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the questions. The implications of the rollout on the Zolaliwe is quite important in that it increased our accessibility. And as a result, it created more cases because people have access, which we welcome. Because then, if there's any dream one has as director of the CCMA, is to one day open a CCMA office in the township and look at numbers. So in other words, we must do a comparison and say, if you look at the case that we have, and if you look at a Khayelitsha, for example, how many referrals are we getting there, and how many people have walked through our doors in town? If numbers suggest that it is largely from there, I can't see any logical reason why we shouldn't open an office there. Well, we can start with a joint project in this, like in the one with the Doll office, and with the case management system there, have a case manager there, and have one hearing room and say, can we then start it as a project? Because I think it's possible. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do that. And it means, therefore, that large number of persons who sometimes have a difficulty with transportation and cost associated with it to come to a case, they don't have to worry about that, because they just walk into the hearing room. The worry we have with the caseload is not much about the caseload itself, it's about also reflecting a sign that people understand their rights, they know where to go. But while they know, we must ensure that they are able to access that finance, and convenience is not an exclusion. So now that it's recently now that we've done this, we'll be monitoring and see the overall impact in the current year that we're in, and see the numbers of people who went into those offices with the Eastern Cape and all of that in Free State, so that we can see what impact it's going to have. So when we report next time, I'm sure we'll have some perfect idea on whether we're having the intended impact on it. But our intended impact is it is easy to access. If you've got a problem with UIF, you've got all those issues relating to the DOL general issues, but if you want to know what's happening with your case, you want to refer your case, you must be able to do it in the same office. So doing that for us, I think it's a wonderful achievement. I think it will have a very positive impact moving forward. On the outreach program, we do cross sectors. There's no specific sector we're targeting. There's two parts to it. There's those where we issue an invitation, and there's those where we are invited to train and do the capacity program. So it's across all sectors. What we've done now lately in 2017-18 APP plan was to approach the capacity building and outreach through targeted sectors. We've just started with mining now, where we had what we call a user forum, where we invited labor, business, and whoever was there, all parties participated. And in that program, you are able also to establish the need that people have when it comes to these outreach programs that we have, and also be able to publish the programs that we have that could assist the different sectors. Because what we've noticed is that every sector has its own unique specific issues. So for us as dispute dissolvers and preventers, we must understand not only the general principles, but we must understand what the sector needs are. And this has assisted us. And when we had this one last week with the mining sector, it was quite mind-opening to understand, because the business chamber of mines was there, the labor was there, and the representative from Mineral Resources Department then made presentations. As a start, it's helping to understand what's happening in the sectors, because this also forms part of the plan that we have currently, that we just don't want to develop commissioners who are generalists. We must be able to develop specialists as well, which then means that if we've got commissioners who are strong on mining law, mixed with employment law, then we must produce those panels, because we're going to produce sector-specific specialists. So the programs that we're in that identify the need amongst those is the capacity programs. It's helping us to get to that objective. So we're hoping that in the end, we would have covered all different sectors. Agriculture and domestic remains vulnerable, but also difficult to access because of the way it's structured. Because how do we communicate programs that we want to do in the domestic sector, because you must go through the employer first, and that is a private dwelling. So it's difficult other than publications and general programs that we run. So we do have those difficult scenarios in the domestic. The same happens with the agricultural sector. The next user forum that we're having, which we'll be holding in Polokwane, specifically deals with agriculture. So we're going there and doing it in Polokwane. Already we're issuing the invitations to ensure that we reach out to those what so-called vulnerable sectors. Because if we don't do that, if you look at the employment law and insecurities and the purpose for which it was created, it was mainly intended for those type of vulnerable people. But if they can't access it, or we can't access them, we're defeating the purpose of the act. So this economic development, the democratization of workplaces, is then not realizable, because what has become even complex, legally speaking. So if we say the system, we want to democratize the workplace, so how do we democratize a domestic sector in the context of the other pay, with the clash between private and public and the employment law? So it becomes difficult but the LRA is not intended to exclude them because of the complexity. We have to find a way, a very complex, a very comprehensive program that will make it easy for employers in the domestic to understand that when you're talking employment law, it benefits those that are there as well. But those are the challenges that we face. So we have had programs, successful programs, where our dispute management and prevention and outreach have reached out to domestic workers, and we have very good numbers that turned out. Whatever we did then, we have to do it again, especially when it comes to new laws, like employment laws. To explain a new law like it's happening now, it's very difficult. But you have to do it. It has to be done. This ties out with the next question that you ask of languages. What we've become sensitive to is languages. I remember we went to KZN meeting users there, and we came in as we were doing the introductions and explaining everything else, and somebody raised an objection and said, "Director, please, can you speak in isiZulu, because we don't understand what you're saying." I know they do understand, but I was just making a statement, and I understood what they were saying. They said, "Please address us in isiZulu. We can see that you can." So I had to speak in English and speak in English and do that throughout the entire presentation. I don't have a problem with that. It's a good thing to do, because then it means I'm reaching out to everybody, and the dominant language is that one there. So we were very successful in doing that. So the way we develop our commissioners now, and those that do the outreach program in particular, multilingualism is an important requirement. Because we've got 11 languages in South Africa, we can't just be able to present in one language. So the multilingualism is a critical factor. You would have noted also that we've started to change our referral forms into other languages, in isiZulu, Xhosa, and all of that as well. Because when somebody fills in the referral form, they must be able to read it themselves and be able to refer it without procuring assistance. So while it's always prohibitive to talk about the cost associated with translation, because the problem gets bigger, because now you get into the hearing room. A party coming in and said, "I'll take this clause from the Beginners' Rupa," in English clause. So when you draft your award, you must have drafting the award or doing the ruling. If you have to face a review, the labor court. So the transcript is with clause. The judge is in English, and things get lost in translation. Then it got entangled in that complexity as well. So the language is really quite more complex than that. But it's got to be done because it's an official language. It has to be done. Because the best way to express your case is to express it in the language you understand best. And therefore, commissioners must also get into the idea of doing so. But at least so far, we do manage. We manage. Thank you, Chairman.
I don't see any hands from the members which
I'm sorry to leave on this. I will assume therefore that even the issue of sign language is also because there are those also addressing that.
Yes, Chairperson. Interestingly that is raised because I remember I was making the opening address and we had about two or three of one of our commissioners who immediately signed, not just the sign language, all the other ones, the disabilities as well. Because those can't see when you speak on your slide, there's a problem on how you express yourself because they miss out on what you're saying because they can't see. And those that can see but can't hear, that's another complication. But we have started developing braille for those that can't see. What is prohibitive about it, that it's very expensive. Even to develop the training material for those that can't see, it's a serious prejudice. One of the things I think as a country we must make a decision about is that while we know and accept the issues of disability, cost in reaching out for those with disability to enjoy what those that are so-called able to enjoy, cost must not be a factor or a prohibitor from achieving it. But I don't think as a country we're doing enough to accommodate the different disabilities in producing the material that covers all of those. Because if you're to produce good commissioners, we've got two commissioners who are blind, who are using braille. And if you were to have 20 or 30 of those, you're going to have to produce the material for them for everything that we train, for all the meetings that we do, and for them to draft through it. And judges must start to adjust to understand that this is a commissioner with disability, and therefore in dealing with those cases, you must accommodate those disabilities and the material required. So as we do budgeting, we must also think along those lines that we must accommodate those that with disabilities in order to ensure that there's an equal footing and we achieve one of the two criteria of eliminating inequality.
Thank you. Members, thank you, DG, and your officials. We have come to the end of our agenda for today, and we are expecting some of your entities tomorrow morning. And thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Tunza, Chairperson of Health Committee. At least your questions have been focusing on your constituencies nowadays, and one would think that you would be more interested in health issues because you are Chairperson of Health. But you must know that she is one of our experienced leaders in the labor movement. She is in the leadership of the South African Communist Party, is one of those who are there. And they are at your disposal. You should take their cards, Honorable Tunja. There is the Commissioner for Compensation Fund. When people knock at your door, they did not get money, they were at work, they got injured, he will solve the problems for you. CCMA, you know him very well. And thank you, Honorable Loliwe, for bringing us Honorable Loliwe. Thank you so much. The meeting.